Do you have an issues, etc. story to tell? We want to hear from you. Tell us your issues, etc. story by calling our comment line before Thursday, April 7th, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Now, the listener with the best story will receive the first three Issues, Etc. books of the month for this year. 618-223-8384. 618-223-8384.
The beginning of Crucifixus from Johann Sebastian Bach's Mass in B minor. Bach was born on this day in 1685. The name is very familiar. The music, well, less familiar. The theology, well, many people know Bach and know very little of his theology, although if they listened to the words in the vernacular or understood the language, they would certainly have a hard time missing the theologian Johann Sebastian Bach. We're going to be remembering the life and the work of Bach with Dr. Paul Grimm in the first half hour of Issues, Etc. on this Monday afternoon, March the 21st. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. This is Issues, Etc. We're coming to you live. You can join us, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at @issuesetc. A little bit later, Dr. James Hannum will join us. He's written a book called The Genesis of Science. We'll talk about the Christian Middle Ages and the true origins of the scientific revolution. Dr. Paul Grimm is Associate Professor of Pastoral Ministry and Missions and Dean of the Chapel at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He formerly served as an Executive Director for the Commission on Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Paul, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd.
Many people hear the name or the music of Bach. They say this is highbrow stuff, really can only be appreciated by music snobs. What does it have to do with Christianity?
Well, that's a loaded question. And one that's a good one to start with. I think that one has to begin by first acknowledging that, in fact, you know, Bach's music is a high art form. There's no doubt of that. I mean, his work really culminated a whole era of over a century and a half that was leading up to in terms of the development of music, and actually propelled on to newer styles that moved along after Bach's death. But for the church, Bach's music just it holds a special place that we do need to remember. Not everybody's going to love Bach, I realize that. And it's not the sort of suggestion to make that Bach should be played every Sunday in every one of our churches, because I mean, the history of music has certainly moved on since the time of Bach, and church musicians have continued to compose music and are composing even now. But if there's one thing that makes Bach stand out, it's just that this creative genius came to bear at a time when the Lutheran Church was actually in a decline, and yet he held out a very high standard in terms of for himself, in terms of the work he did as a composer, but also, you know, wedding that with the theological underpinnings of the Lutheran Reformation that he knew extremely well, and just demonstrated in his music how well that theology could be expressed in musical form.
The majority of his music is for the church, specifically for use by the church. I mean, nowadays it's all concert hall stuff, but he was writing for the daily or the weekly service of the church, wasn't he?
That's right. And that was his, at different points in his life, I should say. You know, Bach had four major employers during his career. Actually had more than that, but four major ones in terms of the time he spent. And in one case, for example, he spent 6 years really as a court musician, writing music for the court. And so for the prince and for a courtly occasion. Some church music written there, but not a lot. But then he moves on to his final post in 1723 and spends 27 years just composing an unbelievable amount of music, especially right at the very beginning, for the church, for the Sunday service, for other special occasions. And indeed, as you said, and unfortunately much of his music today is associated with a concert hall, and that certainly is an appropriate venue for much of his music, but if it's divorced from the liturgical setting, you lose a lot, unfortunately. And so it's gratifying to see time to time various organizations trying to take the music of Bach and actually performing it within a service so that the context actually does help to give a better understanding of the music.
What's his story? What is the world like in the mid-17th century in Germany where he lived? What is the church like and how does he come into it?
Okay, well, there's lots of stories here to tell, but we'll try to limit that. In terms of Lutheranism, and Bach was very much a part of the Lutheran Church, in the latter part of the 17th century, so the very end, beginning of Bach's life, right, those last years of the 1600s, Lutheranism began to experience a movement known as Pietism, which really called into question some of the foundational approaches of the Reformation. Not so much the teachings, although that began to be questioned too, but certainly the practices were questioned. And that starts to take hold, as well as a new movement at the beginning of the 18th century known as rationalism, which really eventually does eviscerate the church and her teachings in many ways in terms of the solid theological foundations that Luther had laid. The city where Bach spent the most of his time, 27 years, was Leipzig, which was an important city, not the largest by any means, but a very important city in Germany, especially known for its book fairs that they would have three times a year, which drew people from all over the place, drew publishers from all over the place. Bach did not have a university education. He was trained well as a schoolboy, sang in the school in the boys' choir, and so he had a good foundational education, but never attended university. Yet in Leipzig, I mean, they have an important university, and Bach is rubbing shoulders with these professors, and certainly was able to hold his own within his own profession, without a doubt. And in as many ways, I mean, he lives sort of in a cosmopolitan location with various influences coming to bear. And as a result of that, one of the things Bach was able to do was to really have a good handle on what was going on in the musical scene around Europe. And so, you know, in his library, we know he had copies of music by all kinds of Italian composers and French composers, English composers. He simply knew these great composers from many eras, including his own contemporaries, which is significant because one of the things it demonstrates is Bach was not just, you know, this Germanic composer and very isolated individual, but was drawing on ideas from all over the place and employing those in the service of the church and her music.
So how does his contribution to the musical life of the church begin?
Well, I mean, he does write some music for the church very early. I mean, his earliest posts are as a church musician in various capacities. In one case, he's sort of the court musician, for the church. I mean, so these princes would have their own little chapels, and so Bach would be writing music in one case for the prince and all his entourage in their palaces. But it is primarily then in that final post that he is finally in a situation that he kind of had hoped for all his life. He's in one place, for example, for about a year, and he left right away because he just knew that he was not going to be able to accomplish what he wanted to do at that particular time in regard to church music. And he even coins a phrase that's been well known for those who study Bach. He talks about desiring to establish a well-regulated church music. And when he finally gets to Leipzig, this last posting that he has for so many years, I mean, he just launches into this with, you know, every fiber of his being, and in the first 3 years composes 200 to 300 church cantatas, which are multi-movement works for choir and orchestra and soloists, based on the readings for every Sunday of the church year. He wrote multiple settings of these things. We about 200 of those survive. We know that are probably about another 100 that are lost, that were never saved. And so he just, with this unbelievable outburst of energy, just composes. Then backs off a little bit. I think he sort of has filled the coffers with materials he's going to need to work with, and over time continues to do a little bit of stuff here and there, but moves on to other ventures as his interests continue to shift a little bit. But still, always, I mean, the church is front and center, the work that he's involved in.
It is a bit of a culture shock. I mean, we're not just talking about high culture here that he's become to epitomize, but a culture shock in the sense of the life of the church, where these things could have been in daily and weekly use in churches today, this is unheard of, with very, very few and rare exceptions. What was church life like musically that these things could be composed and used frequently in the church? About 2 minutes before break.
Right, sure. Well, of course, you have to realize, I mean, he's working in a large city. And so, I mean, the music that he writes is going to be music that's performed in city churches where they have the necessary musical forces to accomplish it. In the smaller churches in the country and rural areas, you're not going to have this kind of elaborate church music. It's going to be a much simpler form. And musicians wrote for those settings as well. But Bach was in this particular setting, and he writes very much for this kind of a time and place, so that the church music is sort of the highest form would be available. And then people who came to the city, whether it's visitors from faraway places for these book fairs they had, or people from the countryside who would frequent, you know, and sometimes their trips would pass through, that they would have a chance to sort of glimpse a heavenly view of what worship will be like in heaven with this grand and glorious music that was being prepared.
So even in his day, this was not typical church music. This was the epitome in that culture of church music.
Indeed, this was the epitome. Yes, that's quite right. But the goal, and I dare say too, even in the smaller settings, I mean, they still strove for high standards and aimed to produce music that was well done, albeit not nearly as complicated as what you will find in much of the music that Bach writes.
Dr. Paul Grimm is our guest. We're talking about the person and work of Johann Sebastian Bach. He's Associate Professor of Pastoral Ministry and Missions and Dean of the Chapel at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, formerly served as Executive Director of the Commission on Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We'll come back just a few more minutes with him talking about the life and work of Johann Sebastian Bach. Live this Monday afternoon, March the 21st, I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
When we say Lutheran, we mean Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. A few more minutes with Dr. Paul Grimm on the life and work of Johann Sebastian Bach. Then we're going to talk about the true connection between the Christian Middle Ages and the scientific revolution. Dr. James Hannum will be our guest, author of The Genesis of science. Dr. Grimm, let's talk a bit about at his time, of course, he contributes greatly. I think he is appreciated within his own circles, albeit those are small circles at the time. And one would expect that from his death on, he would be known, appreciated, understood. But a long time passes before the rest of the world knows of and begins to hear and perform Bach again.
That's right. You know, at the time of his life, he was well known. People came to see him, to hear him, and so it would not have been uncommon to go anywhere in Europe and know the name Johann Sebastian Bach and know some of his music. And in fact, composers who follow after him, like Mozart, for example, knew Bach's music very well and studied it. But the style changed. And just in fact, as Bach is sort of wrapping up a whole century and a half of musical development on this style of music we call the Baroque period, and sort of bringing it all to its absolute perfection, at the same time, there are other musical forces at work with change taking place. Some of it you see in Bach's music a little bit here and there, but it begins to change. And among many of the changes, one that really does have a big influence is the fact that, unlike the preceding centuries, where music was almost always connected with the church, no longer is that always the case. Either the church or the court, you know, the princes and kings had their musicians. That begins to change in the latter half of the 18th century, where suddenly musicians can become freelance artists, you know. They work for hire, and they can write music, and hopefully it becomes famous and popular, and it makes them money, and they can write more music. And they became free agents, so to speak. So, I mean, all these things sort of conspire to a whole new appreciation or expectation. And the music of Bach kind of is seen as old-fashioned and somewhat falls by the wayside in terms of its popular use. Again, though, musicians who are well-trained and the new composers in the next generations, they knew Bach's music and had studied it and recognized the genius that was there. It's not until more than 7 years after his death that his music sort of experiences a renaissance, as Felix Mendelssohn being one in particular who recognizes the importance of Bach's music and actually attempts to revive it with special concerts to play some of the music of Bach. And that sort of begins an interest. Scholars begin an interest in finding the sources of his music to make sure they have scholarly editions of his music. And that sort of rounds out the 19th century and into the 20th century. I mean, the recognition as music history becomes a field of study in its own right, that just how significant Bach was in so many different ways, and that renaissance just continues to this day as you have groups performing Bach's music and specializing in Bach's music all over the world.
Is he for all time now relegated to the concert hall because of the culture, because of the way that the church has progressed or changed in the way that it uses music, or does something of him survive for the regular life of the church? And I'm thinking here in particular about the chorale.
Yes. Well, and that is something I did not mention earlier, but it was the Lutheran chorale, those essential hymns of the Reformation and the following generations, that really were the bread and butter for Bach. I mean, so much of his music is based upon the Lutheran chorales. And that does indeed, you know, continue to this day. He preserves those chorales for another generation, which has inspired composers in succeeding generations to do the same thing. And especially, I'd say, in the latter half of the 20th century, a strong interest in recovering use of chorales that had been lost and just maintaining that great use of those chorales. Bach wrote music in the chorales that is still used today. New composers are writing music on those same chorales that's also used. And so, side by side, you have Bach and succeeding generations all sharing that joy of those Lutheran chorales, those hymns that have been sort of the mainstay of the Lutheran Church for centuries and centuries.
With only 1 minute, Dr. Grimm, how would you describe, we know so much of his music, how would you describe the heart and center of Bach's theology? 1 minute.
He knows Jesus Christ and him crucified. And what Bach does so well in his music is that he is able to demonstrate through all kinds of different techniques the intricacies of that theology that we hold so dear. But at the very heart is the redemption in Christ Jesus that can come through with such clarity and with such poignancy at times, and the musical expression can just be overwhelming and joyful. It's one of those wonderful treasures that the church needs to be aware of, and we need to continue to teach it so that future generations can not only appreciate what Bach did, but can learn from it, grow from it, and be inspired to carry on the tradition.
Dr. Paul Grimm is Associate Professor of Pastoral Ministry and Missions and Dean of the Chapel at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He formerly served as Executive Director of the Commission on Worship for the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. Paul, it's always a pleasure, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure as well.